Okay, so today we're going to work a couple of examples of feedback control, and one that comes up quite a bit. First, we're going to talk about adding or feeding back states other than just the output. Right? And we'll see this can be quite advantageous, and we'll also lead this into stuff we'll do a few weeks from now when we talk about control in the state space rather than in the Laplace domain. So first we're going to look at, in this case, we're going to feed back not just the position, reference error, our output, which in this case is the position y, to get some error, but we're also going to feed back what's going to be a velocity term. That's the output of that, the state of that plant, their internal state. And we'll see there are some advantages to doing this. All right. So in our block diagram here, we have some reference command. Just compare it to the output, some error that we are working directly on comparing to the velocity output command into the plant. All right. So we want to look at how this internal loop affects the response of the system. Right. So where will we start? Yeah, we want to do, what's the objective of that though? Yeah, we want to get the transfer function of the thing, right? Okay, so we can look at this. We obviously have that going on. Okay, know what that input is. We also know that is true. So just kind of piecing together what we can tell right away. Okay. We can this way. How many steps do I want to do for you guys of algebra? Let's skip a few. Seem worthwhile. And what we end up with is that in this case. And what if we do our GP is just maybe our kind of normal mass type transfer function. That should look kind of familiar. Mass with some force on it. We can find this looks like this. All right, so we have a closed-loop transfer function for the system. On the output y, which we're saying is a position output, or from some reference command, r to output y. Okay. Can we say anything about this transfer function so far? Second-order transfer function, sure. It's going to be oscillatory. Sure.
It has
no zeros. No zeros. That's true as well. If we wanted to be able to say a few more things, what can we do about it with this transfer function? There's a certain form that gets us information about the characteristic equation that makes it kind of easy to pick out terms right away.
Yeah, you put it in like standard form to divide everything by J.
Yeah, so you want to divide everything by J. And then we do that, we know what those the coefficients in that characteristic equation represent. Right? You know, that term is always 2 zeta omega n. Okay. So we can find then or we could write our damping ratio that way. So if we have, we're able to kind of set up one of these velocity feedback loops in a position control system, what does increasing that gain do for us? It's KH, yeah.
KH.
Mm-hmm.
That would increase your damping ratio.
Okay. Sure.
So
it's probably a good thing for most of a good number of systems. We want more damping, less overshoot, better settling time. So in that sense, it's acting like a derivative gain. But does it have any effect on natural frequency? No, it doesn't. So we get some extra damping without changing the natural frequency of the system, which can be beneficial at times. All right. So you'll see this kind of feedback, it's kind of common to be able to do that because you want to be able to crank up the damping, right? And this gives you basically a direct way to do that without interacting or changing other terms. So it kind of isolates the damping for you in your control system. Okay, let's work one example with this kind of structure and see how we might pick out the values. In this case, we're going to say we're able to tweak K as well. So we actually, this GP kind of does have proportional control built into it because you have that K we can tune in this case. And we are going to say we can change K as well in this case. So without this, that GP still has a gain, a proportional controller built into it. Right, we could have written this as K 1 over JS plus B. It's proportional control. Okay, so given that system we just had, basically we're going to we won't do all the arithmetic, or I'll just tell you the values once we figure out what arithmetic we need to do, but we'll at least set up how you might figure out what K and KH need to be given some performance objectives. Okay, so we're going to say the moment of inertia in this case, J, is that guy. Okay, and our goal, our control objective, We're going to limit percent overshoot to 0.2. And what we're also going to spec is actually the we want the time of the first peak, right, of that overshoot to happen at 1 second. And we're trying to pick K and KH to do that. So how do we do that? Where do we start? Yeah, so this is a second order system, so those approximations for all those, actually they're strictly speaking exactly true for this. We have approximations or equations that represent each of these parameters in terms of natural frequency and damping ratio, right? What is percent overshoot?
100 e to the negative zeta over one, square root of 1 minus zeta squared.
Close.
So we have that. And in this example, this is actually max percent overshoot. So we'll leave off the 100. So if I plug in 0.2 there, I know right away what the damping ratio needs to be. Solve that equation. 4, 5, 6. Yes. All right. So I know what damping ratio I need to be able to achieve with my controller to meet my percent overshoot requirement. All right. What about the peak time? That's the settling time. Anybody remember the peak time equation? Pi over omega d. Does that make sense intuitively when that peak would happen? Well, what is this? I have a damped system. What's its period? A system oscillating at omega d, it's damped. What's the period? One other frequency if you're in hertz. What if you're in? Well, omega d is a natural frequency. I'm asking what's the period? Okay, so we had that it's so then what is it? How many slides? So my natural frequencies in cycles a second, if you're hertz, or you can look at 2 pi radians a second. Okay, so what's the period? This is the omega d is how many times I go through 2 pi in 1 second. The time is how long does it take me to go through 2 pi of a oscillation, 1 cycle, right, which is 2 pi radians. Okay, so given we got to that, does this make sense intuitively? Why?
Peak time's half a cycle.
Yeah, it's half a cycle. Does that make sense? Yes? Yeah, particularly, remember, these are all based on a step input. Like, if you had some kind of ramp up or some S-curve or something, some kind of fancier input, then maybe not, right? But remember, the input that all these equations are based on is the step. So I'm telling the system to move as fast as you can. That peak is going to start moving. That peak's going to happen at half a period. No, we looked at those, separate out the type, system type, with the system order. Those are not necessarily the same for a given system. Okay. So our peak time makes sense intuitively. We want that to be 1 second. So that tells us that omega D needs to be pi radians a second. All right. What does that tell us omega n needs to be? Or what's the relationship between omega d and omega n? We know that is true. Right? That's the equation for the damped natural frequency. We plug in all those values, solve for omega n. Okay, so that tells us what natural frequency we need to hit our peak time constraint. Right. Well, do we have anything else that tells us the natural frequency? K over J. So we know that this needs to be the same as that. Right? Based on this, putting it in our standard form for a second order system. So right away we can figure out what K is. And it ends up being 20. So we have our proportional gain. All right. So how do I get to what KH needs to be? Yeah, so I can look. I have an expression for the damping ratio. I have a value it needs to be. Do I know all the other terms? So I have B is given. That's a property of the physical system. I just figured out what K needs to be.
You have J.
I have two, obviously. You know J. And we know what omega N is. So I could plug in there. And you know what K needs to be. Yes.
Okay, so what is KH, like, in this context? Like, physically, what's KH?
It's a parameter I get to choose. It's just a gain. So I'm measuring the velocity of the system. Right? Comparing that with some kind of error signal here. Right? And using that relationship to generate the input to the plant.
Okay. It's just some proportional gain.
It's proportional to the velocity, yes. Kind of acts like a derivative gain in that you can increase damping with it. Doesn't act like a derivative gain because it has no effect on natural frequency. It doesn't add any zeros. Right? If you had a pure derivative gain, pure PD feedback controller here, right, you end up with zeros, which also affect the response. Right. So this can be useful in that it allows you to kind of isolate cranking up the damping ratio. Right, there's less coupling, I would say, between the proportional and derivative type gain.
Yeah, so it doesn't have any effect on, like, if there's some sudden increase in the response of your system, it can't react to that because it's not a derivative.
Sudden increase in...
Like, so derivative... the derivative gains act as some sort of... to change in your system, right? So it's on something...
Yeah, it's like a damper, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not predictive in that sense.
Well, it is in the fact that it's, you know, it lets you change your damping ratio of the closed loop system.
But it doesn't do anything for your overshoot because it doesn't mess with your frequency. So it can't, like, you know, stop you from whatever. I think I answered my own question.
Okay. All right, so where would you go? You know, you have some kind of set of values for what you think those gains need to be now. What would be next, you think?
What are we trying to do next?
Yeah, so so let's say I gave you a system, right? I gave you GP. Your boss comes up and sits GP on the table in front of you. Right? Says, okay, I want to control this thing, and you better be able to give me 20% overshoot in a peak time of 1 second. Okay, you go off, do what we just did. What's next?
Plotting the response.
So, yeah, you could look at responses and make sure you actually hit what you hit. Do we know J to that level of precision?
Probably not.
Okay. Do we know B to that level of precision?
Probably not.
Do we even know GP has this form? Probably not. Right? So everything we just did, if you had a system sat down in front of you that you think had this transfer function, is an approximation. It probably has some higher order dynamics, some flexible stuff maybe. But if they're so much faster than where, you know, this is the dominant response of the system, that we can approximate it as this. Remember, we went through that whole section of where can you start approximating and reducing systems down to their dominant components. So this, I can guarantee you that model is wrong. And I can guarantee you that every model you make in your entire career is wrong. It's just a matter, is it wrong enough where your answers you're getting are still not relevant? Right? I think your modeling systems, just keep that in mind. This is an approximation of what's really happening. And then the kind of next question, is it a good enough approximation for me to get valuable information? Right? That's, you know, in some sense, engineering in a nutshell. Right? We are approximating the world with equations and analysis. And is our approximation accurate enough, precise enough, to where that it's still valuable on real systems? Okay. So you get these values, you know, say, okay, I'm going to approximate the system my boss set in front of me like this, and I have values that look sort of like this, right? Well, we have a transfer function. We can look at, you guys have done sensitivity analysis to change in these parameters, right? So I can look, I can select these two values of K and KH, plug those guys in, and then you can do that sensitivity analysis to what happens if J changes. Okay. How does that change the response characteristics, the characteristics of this transfer function? Or you could do the same thing for what if B changes. Right. How does the system, right? You can write the transfer function for the error. And look at how does the error change as those two things change as well. So we got to an answer based on some assumptions. This is the starting point. I guess it's the bigger, you know, one of the points I'm trying to make here. As this control system, this analysis, to remember our models are approximations. You're not going to have system parameters to this kind of precision generally. You're going to have bounds on them, probably. So when you're solving problems like this, we're going to keep that in mind. That's this is the starting point. Okay. Okay. So let's look at another kind of velocity control system. And this one shows up quite a bit. Because we want to control how fast things are going.
So we're not going to take the values that we found and go further?
For this problem, not right now, no. So we previously did the position control of a DC motor. Well, let's look and see if we can also do something with the velocity control for that motor. All right. And I'm going to propose feedback controller looks something like this one. So in this case, I have some, you probably could call that like a theta d, desired angle that I want my DC motor. So we had our DC motor transfer function was something like this. And when I'm saying that GP bar, we're just backing out the velocity term of that guy, right? So going backwards, it's just S times that. That's our term for the, we drop a voltage across the motor, it spins at this speed. So this is motor speed as a result of some voltage across the terminals. And then we integrate that speed and we get the position. So I'm just kind of breaking that, the S term of that transfer function out, if you will. And we have some kind of feedback controller back here that's comparing our desired position to the actual position and acting on it. And it's giving us some reference velocity in this case. So given the error in my position of my motor shaft, I need to spin at this speed to get rid of that error in one direction or another. Okay. Well, velocity error. So I have, just to kind of step through and make sure we're all on the same page, I'm giving my input to the total system as some kind of desired output shaft angle of the motor. Right? It gets compared to the actual shaft angle, generates some error. We have a control of the axle on that that generates a reference velocity. I need the motor to turn at this speed to eliminate that error. Okay. So that reference velocity gets compared to the actual motor's angular velocity. Generate this error signal. We act on that in some way to generate a voltage to give to the motor. Everybody with me now? Okay. So we do this all the time, basically. All right. So let's look. I want to look really just at this inner loop for right now. So I'm going to redraw it, actually. And velocity. Okay. What we're going to say is this GC. And this kind of framework, that GC bar, that controller is responsible for making sure the motor is going the speed that you're actually asking it to go. Right. So I have some reference motor angular velocity, and this internal feedback loop is trying to make the actual motor velocity match the speed that I want it to move at. And let's just do proportional control for now. Okay. So if there's some error between the actual motor speed and our desired motor speed, we crank up the voltage or reduce the voltage proportional to that. All right. So I want to design this internal, this inside inner control loop. Where do I start? Find a transfer function. All right. So what I want is that, right? Closed loop transfer function. What is it? That's right. Okay. Or, because that's just KP, all right, what's next? Locus, yeah, I could plug in those terms over there and well, I really need to do that, but is that right? That doesn't feel right. By that top and bottom, yeah, okay. All right, so we can do a root locus? Sure. So what do we need to do to set that up? Open loop poles and zeros. Okay. What are my open loop poles? What's the open loop transfer function? So we have a pole there. How many loci, separate loci, does this root locus have?
Only one.
Only one. Okay. Where is it located at?
Half to the left.
The left of this. All the way over here, I have, so anywhere to the left of that pole, I have an odd number of poles and zeros to the right of me. So it fills in. Our root locus is done. Right, we have one locus, we already drew it. So what does that tell you about the response of this? What can we do with this controller?
I don't know, it's not an oscillatory response.
Not an oscillatory response, that's probably good.
Yeah.
Right? We don't want our velocity oscillating all over the place.
It seems like almost anything we want.
Yeah, exactly. This root locus suggests I could crank up the gain and move this pole infinitely far over here, if I want. What does that mean for the response?
Faster without consequence.
Yeah, so I can make this thing, this root locus suggests, that I can make this closed loop system as fast as I want. What does that mean for the tracking performance?
Better.
Yeah, so what it's effectively saying is I can track any kind of velocity signal you give me perfectly. Well, that root locus goes out to infinity over here. So if I'm out here at infinity, then yeah, it's infinitely fast. I can track anything perfectly. Okay. Well, as you probably can guess, it's not quite so easy. And let's look at why. Okay. Let's look in the time domain of what this internal velocity controller would be doing. Okay. So what we have, that U of t is some voltage we're applying to the motor, right? That's what we said. Well, we said that's proportional to the error in velocity of that motor. Well, error in velocity for us is that I'm going to write this as a theta dot. Okay. Or we can write it, and I'll drop the, everything's a function of time. We can write it like that. Any problems with that?
You damp your stuff out the higher KP gets. Other than that, I have no idea.
Okay. Other ideas?
You can only go to a certain voltage, I'm sure.
Sure, so that's one issue here, right? If this perfect performance, right, I keep cranking KP up, KP up until the closed loop pole is over here somewhere. Yeah, that perfect performance requires me to be able to crank up the actual voltage across my motor to accommodate that difference as well, which of course I can't do. There's going to be some limit there. Okay. So yeah, now we can't get perfect tracking performance anymore because there's going to be limits on what U of t can be. Okay. And we kind of discussed that a little bit before in terms of how far you can actually push poles left given a gain, that kind of thing. What else? So limits on two, so that's kind of... You have some limits on its absolute value. So there's only a maximum voltage. There's probably some limits on how quickly it can change. All right, so I probably can't change my voltage instantaneously either, depending on my drive system. I can continuously change the voltage, but there may be rate limits on how quickly I can change it, depending on what kind of drive system I have, what kind of power supply I might have. It has its own dynamics that might matter.
So if you're increasing your KP, your proportional gain to your velocity, wouldn't that cause some errors in your position?
Maybe, but what we're saying is, hey, in some sense, in the kind of how we're working this problem, we're assuming that I got this outer part and it's nice and tuned, and I just need to get the low level. I can generate the exact velocity command I need for my position to track. This is kind of, we know we can choose GC perfectly. But yeah, I mean, that's maybe another source of error is that, yeah, there's going to be some maximum velocity of the motor. Right, so there's some constraints on what the actual motor can do. So RV might go off to infinity for perfect tracking of what to make this happen, and the motor can't do that. Right. So, yeah, maybe we have some limits there too. Yes. Yep. And there might even be some limits on how quickly I can accelerate the motor. So you have all these kind of physical limits that this doesn't tell you anything about. Because those are nonlinearities, actually. Root locus and all the tools we've talked about so far are designed for linear systems, like most of the engineering you're learning. As an undergrad, just so happens that linear approximations are usually pretty good, but you need to be aware that there are some things. Okay, there's another problem with this, however. Okay, other than these kind of physical limits, what's happening to that with you? Remember, this is a voltage. So let's look at two cases. So I have some error. Theta d is greater than theta. Theta d dot, my desired speed, is greater than my actual speed. Okay. So that's positive. I get a positive voltage.
Positive
or
negative voltage.
All right. So, theta d. Theta d is less than my actual. Theta d is less than my desire, my actual, right? Well, what's that going to do for the voltage? Well, this sign becomes negative. Now all of a sudden I've switched my voltage to the motor. What happened if these, right, okay? These are guys are really close now. Right? You're kind of tracking, which is what we want. That sign can be switching back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Right? Do you think your electronics, your motor driver is going to be able to handle that, right? So that's a problem. right? That, and it's a problem, particularly like the problem happens when I'm getting close to good tracking in some sense, right? My theta is getting close to theta d. It's back and forth, back and forth. So it can be happening pretty fast too. And I'm going to some positive voltage to, hey, you need to speed up, is what we want it to happen, or some negative voltage. Yeah, it's gonna, you're gonna burn out your motor driver this way.
It's kind of like if your AC was trying to get perfect accuracy instead of.
Sure.
It keeps turning the cool and the heat and the cool and the heat.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, you're just bouncing back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. That's gonna burn out most motor drivers on the planet. Okay. All right. So, what do we do? So one option, and kind of a thermostat type idea, is you have some what we will call a dead zone around the desired velocity. All right. So if you're within some range around my desired speed, don't do anything. Just keep doing what you're doing. Right? Don't change. I think that's what you're saying, right? Call that a dead zone. Depending on your controller, you're not doing anything there. The rate at which it changes. Sure, so I could... So I could not let it even try to switch from plus 12 volts to negative 12 volts from one time step to the next. I enforce some kind of limit on the rate of change of that voltage. Right. That's not uncommon either. Rate limits, you'll see all the time. Other ideas? Well, that's what you want to happen.
So that's what you want to happen.
Yeah.
So wouldn't it be best to make sure that it's always just short of it? So that way, I guess it's still using the dead zone.
Yeah, it's kind of a dead zone idea. And that actually brings up case I don't even have in the notes. What's your voltage when you're exactly at the right speed?
Zero.
What's your motor going to do? Yeah. Right. So this is not going to work so well. Yeah. You kind of run into this is a problem. So one or two over there doesn't necessarily help you with this. Right. What can I do? Any ideas? More ideas? Yeah, I think that ends up looking something like this, right? And that if I'm only going to update my control input ever, infrequently, you're effectively rate limiting how much it can change per unit time.
Could I put it so that way?
basically make the motor, like once it gets to a certain speed, it can't go further. Like you basically, like it starts slowing down. You have something that starts creating.
Sure. So you could also put. Well, that kind of fits here, actually. Right, so that a problem of our perfect tracking can kind of be a solution. So in these the rate limits on voltage, you can also rate limit the change, kind of make sure you have a nice RV. Right, so think more intelligent about what you're asking the motor to do. Don't, you know, the RV, the desired voltage, so be more careful about theta D.
Although that would...
Maybe. Maybe do something smarter with theta D. That's possible. Maybe. So, flexible not in terms of vibratory inflexible, but in options of changing, right?
If you're driving a car, sometimes the speed limit is 55, sometimes it's 70.
Sure. So, I mean, you could put some maximum limit on it. You could do some kind of rate limit on the motor speed, right? Okay. Let's try a different control loop. I mean, all those are possible solutions. Maybe we need to change the architecture of our controller. Okay, so let's see. I'm going to draw it somewhere. Where do I want to put it? I'm going to leave up this loop. I'm going to draw I saw this loop one time in my textbook. Does that help me? Where this is still, GC and GP are still the same. Changes the transfer function. Sure, so what's the closed loop transfer function for this system? Okay, what's the open loop transfer function? It's the same. Doesn't seem like it's going to help us so much. Okay. So what's the answer? What do we need to do?
We're not smart enough.
No, I don't.
I mean, all we have is proportional gain right now. So.
All you have is proportional gain.
Could maybe think about adding a derivative gain.
Okay. So, sure, that's a possible option. I'm going to... going to call it some kind of fancier GC bar, maybe. Well, what do we want to happen? Okay, let's think about that. Because I think we can solve this with just a proportional controller. All right. Although I guess it will end up being a little bit fancier, but not so fancy. Okay. So if our desired speed is greater than our actual speed, what do we want to do with the voltage to the motor?
Decrease.
Desire is greater than actual. Okay. So in this case, so we're going to increase U of T, increase the voltage across the motor. Okay. If the desired is slower than the actual, what do we want to do? We want to decrease the If the desired, if the actual is equal to the desired, what do we want to do with the voltage? We want it to be the same. So what we're saying is whatever voltage we're giving this thing right now, it's working pretty well because my actual speed is matching my desired speed. Kind of constant. Okay. Any ideas based on that, what we can do?
We can change KP.
I'm saying I think you can do this with a fixed constant KP. But that might fall under number 5 of our possible solutions to do some kind of fancier time-varying KP. That's possible. Okay. So let's walk back through this. And I will erase this now that we've seen it. Those two are the same. All right, so I'm going to have some non-zero speed, let's say. So I know I need some kind of nominal U to be have a non-zero speed, right? That's kind of what that last point is telling us, right? And then, well, let's run our three cases. That is so those are the three cases we've identified. This is what we want to be happening with this motor. We want our desired speed to match our actual speed. I heard somebody have a revelation. Yeah. What do you think we need to do?
I forgot what it's called.
Okay.
I think I know where it's going.
Okay. So let me ask the next question. How do I choose how much I want to increase the voltage if for that first case?
Based on the magnitude of the error?
Yeah, I probably could do something proportional to okay. And okay. Well, how do I know how to what to do in the second case?
Same thing.
I can do the same thing. So what I'm saying here is I want to have the change in voltage be proportional to the error.
Not the voltage itself.
So maybe I could write and we see that equation works for both of those cases, right? So I think we have a that works for all three cases, right? But is this U here going to be constant? No. Right, so that guy's going to be varying as well. So
it's an initial
I'm going to say what we really want to happen, I'm going to write it.
Your new U of T is equal to your old U of T plus some
T. Yes. So what we want to happen is I'm just adjusting, so the U of T minus 1 is kind of my control voltage the last time I was adjusting my controller, my control input. Okay. So I take that and I adjust it based on some kind of delta U of T, which is just proportional to the error in voltage. Okay. But how do I do this? And if I want to do our analysis so far, how do I handle something from last time step kind of thing? Do we know how to do that yet? Well, we said that this is time varying, right? So how this vary? If you want to write,
just take it at an instance in time, some delta t before.
Well, let's back up a half step. Let's think about how this works, right? So I have the motor spinning, right? Which so at some u, some voltage, measure the output. I find there's some error, so I need to adjust. So I take the current value, do my adjustment based on this guy, and I have the new value to issue to the motor. Issue that to the motor, measure the output. Oh, still not right, but my old value that I just got from the first adjustment is now this one. Right. So what I'm asking is how do I handle that, or how can I handle that with analysis tools we have at our disposal so far? Because this is a varying signal, and how this varies affects the response, right? So this is not just a constant there. It's a little bit of a trick question because you guys don't know how to do this yet. Turns out this is basically a pure time delay, right? We need something that happened in the past. Our current input is based on what we were doing last time we tried to change this controller. Right? We've been working in what's called continuous time. Right? These are functions of continuous analog functions of time. Right? You go to implement a controller, real controller, and even in the simulations, right, you're picking a time sampling. Right? I measure stuff, I do stuff in this time step, I do it the next time through. And there's some time associated with that. It's called digital control or discrete control. Right? Pretty much every control system, most control systems of interest, let's say, are digital control systems. They have a time associated with them for each loop of the controller. Right? When you guys were writing your 201 code, your controller was digital. Right? It had a time associated with each time through the loop. Right? This is just that. Okay. So this is not so easy to address directly in the continuous domain. It can be done, right? But it's out of the scope of this class. Right? We'll talk briefly on Thursday probably about how to deal with some of these delays and how they might show up. And if you there's another way. So there's the Laplace transform, which you guys learned. There's also this operator called the Z transform. It's for these digital type systems. Less important than it used to be because we are able to sample really fast now. But actually that digital sampling can have some effects on your system dynamics. So the Z-transformer accounts for that effectively. Things get really fast, those differences start to disappear. So continuous time makes a lot more sense. But the Z-transform makes this equation trivial to deal with. Yeah?
Does that have anything to do with step transformations in differential equations, like for different functions?
Step transformation.
Like different time steps? Like this function starts here?
Don't think this does, but certainly something we'll talk about on Thursday does. Okay. Questions about that? I just wanted to bring that one up because this velocity form of the PID controller, which is kind of what this is, you don't see it in most undergrad textbooks, but it's used all the time outside of a controls class.
So just as you will, the simplest way to get that u of t minus 1 would just be to assume it starts at 0, bring your voltage up until it gets above your desired.
So let's talk through that case. So I start my system sitting on a table. I have some desired speed I want it to be going. My current voltage is 0. Okay. So I go over my equation to calculate what the change needs to be, whatever, depending on what k is, right? Okay, now I apply that, so I have 0 plus that change. My new voltage is, in that case, just the change, right? And I see, oh, well, I still have some error. So I have the original u of the change I made in the first step through plus some change resulting from the current error. Right. Next time through, I have the two changes now, plus some change resulting from the current error. So it's a kind of iterative, every time through me checking the error in my speed, I'm taking the voltage I had the last time I did this calculation, plus some change. And this is actually really easy to implement if you're writing the digital controller. Writing it out in terms of a root locus or something is not so easy. But it shows up everywhere. So again, that's not something that shows up in most undergrad textbooks, but this form of the PID controller gets used quite a lot. So I wanted to make sure you guys saw it. Other questions? Yeah, you're doing velocity control, basically. Yep. So whatever, you know, probably throttle position. Throttle position I have, I'm going up a hill. I have some error between my desired speed and my actual speed. I better bump up the throttle position a little bit because I'm slowing down. I'm going up a hill. Or I'm going down a hill, and I need to lay off the throttle a little bit. That's cruise control. Yeah. Yeah, this handles that fine. It handles that fine. This theta d doesn't need to be a constant. Yeah. So back to our old control loop, like, and this is that piece, right? So I can measure my desired angle of that motor, right? And based on that desired angle, and this controller generate some reference velocity to eliminate the position error of my motor. And that reference velocity is going to eliminate the position error needs to get enforced. I need to track that velocity well to make sure that I get rid of position error for my system. So imagine, you know, this shows up in robotic arms, for example. Right? I want my, you know, where this theta would be a joint angle or something. Right? So I want the end effector position of my robotic arm to track a position through space. Right, and get there at the right times, then I better be able to control the velocity of this joint as well. Right, so the error in position gives me what velocity I need to do to eliminate error in position.
There's a really bad one of those on the internet right now with a black suit.
Bowl of soup. Okay, yeah, I think I've seen that.
The person has a, they lift up the bowl of soup and they move it and they don't control it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's one YouTuber that makes all kinds of robotic contraptions that just don't work. It's kind of a skit that like spills a glass of water on it all the time or some stuff like that.
But.
Okay. That's all I got today.